Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the April 10th edition of the MMA Report podcast presented by Roman with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to get you ready for UFC 236, which is on Saturday night from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll talk about the two title fights. Plus, we'll talk about, are there any other fights on the card that interest us as well? And speaking of UFC 236, the opening fight of that night is going to feature a UFC debut in Randy Costa. I've interviewed Randy a pair of times, actually interviewed him about 2 or 3 days before he got signed for this fight. But on this week's podcast, you're going to hear from his striking coach, Greg Rebell. Of course, I've had Greg on the show before, fire and a coach. So get some interesting insights from Greg into Randy Costa heading into this one. Also talks about Andre Sukumthaw, who he has known since Andre was a teenager. Even noted that when Andre was like 16, 17 years old, Andre was actually one of the guys that walked out with Greg for one of his fights. So you'll hear that conversation I had earlier this week. Plus, you're going to hear my conversation with John Castaneda, who's going to be fighting on Friday night, Combat Day 34. Of course, that's an event that you can watch on DAZN. Then we're going to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking about the suspension of TJ Dillashaw after testing positive for EPO. We'll talk about the bare knuckle president backtracking on statements he made during the event on Saturday night. Tito Ortiz is in the news, and yes, he's planning to fight later on this year. Plus, we'll talk a little bit about the Bellator press conference that happened on Tuesday in New York City, in particular in relation to the welterweight tournament. But, Daniel, I mentioned on Sunday night or early Monday morning, whichever way you want to look at it, that I did watch WrestleMania, and I would give my thoughts about it here on the podcast. And, you know, my initial thought, you know, and of course, everyone, you know, has stated how long of a show it was. But, Daniel, I was kind of sitting there thinking about it. If you just watched the pay-per-view, the quote-unquote main card, it was about as long as a UFC fight card from beginning to end.
It was. It was like 5.5 hours, which we are totally conditioned to sitting in front of a TV and watching these 10, 11, 12, 13 fight cards. And I don't know what it is about wrestling versus MMA, but with MMA, it does feel like it's going quicker somewhat. But maybe it's just because we are so damn used to these long fight cards, Jason. I mean, they are ingrained in our soul. This is just how long they are. If you are an astute observer of the sport, you're going to sit down and watch those early prelims all the way to the main card. It's just another Saturday. But for those people that were in the arena, you know, let's say they got into that 80,000-seat arena at MetLife Stadium at 3 o'clock Eastern and started leaving at 12:30 Eastern, that is a 9-hour day. And that, to me, sounds like absolute hell, trying to get some type of transportation to get home after WrestleMania.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of people just trying to get out of there. Uber drivers basically saying, hey, I can get you in right now for $200. I mean, woof, that's and of course, I live here in Tampa, Florida, which will host WrestleMania next year. So, I grew up watching wrestling. I probably really kind of stopped really watching wrestling probably in the early, 2000s, being in college and other things just kind of happening in my life. And, went over to a buddy's house, and it was funny because before I went over, my wife says to me, she said, oh, what time are you going to be home? I was like, oh, you know, the thing should be over by 11, 1130. Boy, was I wrong with that one. I rolled in my house about 1245. Main event I thought was kind of underwhelming. Obviously, weird kind of how that finished off. Obviously, you're the wrestling guy on this show. Like, to me, I felt like the show peaked pretty early, and then it kind of gradually just went down.
Yeah, the best moment was definitely Kofi Kingston winning the title. Also, Brock Lesnar dropped the title like in 3 minutes. So, you know, one would think his WWE run is pretty much over for this time. But I do think that the main event was hurt because it was in the main event spot, just because like so much of pro wrestling has to do with interaction between what's happening inside the ring and how the crowd reacts. And man, to go on and as the last match of the entire card, totally, that event peaked 2 to 3 hours earlier, and that crowd they cared, but they didn't care to the point where it really justified what was going on beforehand. Because beforehand, Becky Lynch was absolutely just the biggest star in the WWE, and you would think anything she would do in winning the title would be a huge deal. But between the way how the match ended and just how the crowd was, I mean, it was just the wrong spot for them, even though it was obvious that you had three women, you had to put them in the main event and do something quote-unquote historic, you know. So, yeah, it was a very long show, and I will say, watching all the Ronda Rousey matches, this was definitely a part of the bottom performances she's had. Now, she's knocked it out of the park every time she's gone out and performed, but absolutely, it was a bit of a weird ending, for sure. And the match itself, I didn't think delivered to what one expected, but it was still, I mean, that's kind of been the story of WrestleMania the past few years, is that the matches have been there. There's been a lot of quality matches. It's just the amount of matches and how long this show is has ended up being the ultimate error for the WWE. It's just been a huge mistake to do these super long shows inside of stadiums.
Yeah, it was. But I do want to correlate this to MMA, and particularly with the UFC. You look at what WrestleMania weekend is like in a town. So up in, you know, New York City and East Rutherford, New Jersey. And I was thinking, is there something that the UFC could do to kind of build a WrestleMania-type weekend? I mean, the closest thing we have is International Fight Week, and I just don't know, could the UFC put on that type of event that gets people talking the way they talk about WrestleMania?
The way WrestleMania goes, it's difficult to say, Jason. I mean, International Fight Week was like that, but I did feel like the past 2 years, that Fight Week has definitely lost its luster. But it does seem like the Fight Week is the best ability to attempt to do something like WrestleMania weekend. The difference with MMA and wrestling is that wrestlers are able to be used multiple times within days of each other. So you had guys, stars, being used 7 times or so during Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're commodities. So you can just use them all the time. Whereas with fighting, you're using these fighters once every 3 months. And if you're the UFC, the thing is, if you put on a huge fight, adding more bigger fights to that fight card isn't really going to help you out that one night. And in fact, it's going to hurt you long term by not putting those main event caliber fights on other fight cards. So it's just not worth it, I think, when you can only book a guy 3 or 4 times a year, whereas in wrestling you can do it every year. You can stack the deck and you can do events after event after event. So in terms of like how WrestleMania weekend looks like, I really don't think it's realistic to expect a big-time similar effort out of the UFC that attracts just the world's attention. For the UFC, it seems like the bread and butter for getting all of the eyeballs around Jason would be just that one big fight that we get a year, or that 2 or 3 big fights we get a year when the whole world pays attention to the UFC. It's all about booking that single contest, whether it be a Conor McGregor fight or Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier. It's all about booking that single contest that gets all of our attention, whereas the wrestler is all about the whole package. But, I mean, as you sit there and watch, Jason, I mean, what would your hypothetical UFC WrestleMania weekend look like? What would you put on there, Jason?
Every big name possible. I mean, Conor, Brock, Jones, Cyborg. Those are names that really pop out in front of me. I mean, like you look at International Fight Week right now, and I'm just on MMA Junkie looking at what they have listed. So we've got Jones Santos as your main event, Nunez Holm as your co-main event, Askren and Masvidal, Dos Santos, Ngannou, Chiesa Sanchez. I mean, that's a, you know, in terms of name value, it's a nice card, but it's not going to get any, you know, it's to me, it's, you know, it's a little more than your normal pay-per-view. I mean, I think in terms of excitement level, I mean, if Brock truly is done in WWE for right now, and all his attention is going to be, you know, towards Daniel Cormier, and August is the number that you're hearing as a potential date for that one. I mean, to me, that fight card will probably do better than International Fight Week will.
Yeah, man, it's all about that one fight. That fight week has Jon Jones. The problem is, it also has Santos. And that's the issue there. I don't know, man. I just feel like I love the idea of a gathering for sure, but it just seems like that deal is going to change year to year, almost like the Super Bowl. And it also changes in terms of dates, just whenever the UFC can book the biggest fights. But on the horizon, it's like, what is the biggest fight that you've seen in book? It's that one. It's Cormier versus Lesnar. To me, the biggest problem in the UFC right now, and it's a huge one, is I don't see a star on the horizon quite yet that I think can take the baton, because some of these big-time draws in the UFC are very old, or if they're not old, they're nearing the end of their careers. So I just wonder, moving forward, what the UFC really needs, Jason, is these one or two fighters to evolve into that mega draw that Conor McGregor was, or even a guy like Jon Jones or GSP was. And I just don't see it at this point. I mean, it could hypothetically be Max Holloway. It could hypothetically be Henry Cejudo. I mean, Israel Adesanya. These guys have the talent for sure. It's just there is something absolutely unexplainable about how you need to have the talent and like the it factor to become that superstar that draws eyeballs.
Come on, you know what the biggest fight the UFC can make right now is.
What is it?
Conor Khabib 2. Like, they can sit here and rail on what Conor and Khabib are doing to each other on social media, but let's be realistic about it. When that rematch is booked, you know the UFC is going to use those tweets on social media that were wrong on both sides of the equation as a way to promote the fight.
I mean, the bigger question is, will they utilize the fight? Will they promote the fight?
No.
They got all these fighters in trouble.
No. You know they are going to, like when I saw Dana White, like, I'm going to reach out to camps and talk to them, like, come on, Dana. You know you're going to use this as promotional material.
Maybe they should do, like, a rehab, like, I'm Conor and I'm better now. Like, I'm Khabib and I won't start fights anymore.
Dude, Conor apparently punched a guy in a bar this past weekend.
I know.
Because like, he's ragging on him about what could be. Like, I'm sitting here going, hey, Conor, man, why are you in a bar, man?
You can't take the bar away from Conor, but you can't take Conor out of the bar. All right? This guy is born and bred. I mean, he's got to have like 5% alcohol. No, right?
Where is Conor Boy, the one that does the punching and not Conor?
I know. He should have a whole motley crew. I just think Conor gets off on this. It's like, good Conor, man. This guy's so nuts that he punches a guy in a bar, and it's just like white noise to us.
It's one of these things of you're not surprised anymore when you wake up to that type of news involving Conor McGregor.
Compare what Conor does to what any other sports athlete does. Look at what if LeBron James just punched a guy in a bar? It would be the biggest story in sports for a year.
I was listening. I want to say it was a co-main event podcast, and they were talking about this, and it was in relation to a question they got that was more about, you know, why does the media more concentrate on anything Conor does as opposed to say a story about, you know, Dustin Poirier auctioning off fight worn gear, and for this fight he's using the money to build a playground for disabled children. And I know other UFC fighters have told Dustin, hey, we want to help you out with this as well. And it was basically like, well, it's a great story, but no one clicks on that link. But they'll click on a link of, hey, Conor throws a punch in a bar, or hey, here's new footage of Kamar Usman, Ali Abdelaziz going after Colby Covington at a buffet. I mean, it's the fact we live in. But I mean, like, when it comes to Saturday's pay-per-view, I mean, look, and I don't think it's going to do well. You know, and we'll probably never know truly how well it did with this being the first UFC pay-per-view exclusively on ESPN Plus in the U.S. is I like the top two fights, you know, taking the whole interim thing out of it, just in terms of the fights. I like the fights, but Dale, I'll pose this question to you. Outside of the top two fights, is there another fight on this card that you're all in on?
0% no. No, this is a two-fight card. This is absolutely a two-fight card. This is absolutely a, thank God we're on ESPN Plus card. That's how I would describe it. I love the top two fights, Jason. But up and down, from the light heavyweight contest between Eric Anders and Khalil Roundtree to Ben Davis, Randy Costa, which, don't get me wrong, I love me some Randy Costa. I love me some Brandon Davis. It's just that when you think of a five-fight main card for pay-per-view, there's only two fights here that scream out to me, pay-per-view quality UFC fights. The prelims, it's fine if they, you know, get fighters who are developing or rebounding from losses, put them there. But on the main card, at least give me three or four. But at this point, you look at that main card, and it looks like they booked two great fights, and the rest they just kind of threw on there. Fights that would look that look like prelim material. You know, Khalil Roundtree versus Eric Anders, I think will be pretty exciting until maybe Anders goes for a takedown. And I just look at these fight cards, and they just look like they are filling space with fighters. And there isn't a lot of purpose with these main cards. And this one in particular, Jason.
When I look at the other three fights on the pay-per-view, to me, there are three matchups that I think the UFC expects to be striking fights and that ultimately will end in a finish. Daniel, is it wrong for me to say your best prelim fight is Curtis Milner versus Bilal Muhammad, which is on the early prelims?
That's a good question. I don't think you're wrong for saying that. I slightly disagree with you because my pick, my personal pick, is Wilson Hayes against Alexander Pantoja. I'm just a big fan of Pantoja, and I know Hayes is talented. But you look at this whole lineup, other than that fight, I think Milner Muhammad is definitely a representation of these are two relatively skilled welterweights, two guys that have had some success, maybe some negative outings lately. But in terms of most potential for each individual competitor, I would say Hayes and Pantoja and Milner Muhammad. Those are the two fights I would really circle and checkmark that I'm looking forward to on the prelims.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to note about the early prelims, and I know John Morgan noted this on his social media, and I looked at the ESPN Plus schedule. The early prelims are also slated to be on ESPN Plus along with UFC Fight Pass, because if you think about it, if the early prelims were not on ESPN Plus, you would have to have every platform to be able to watch this entire fight card. You'd have to pay your $10 a month for Fight Pass. You'd have to have your ESPN subscription through whatever service you have. And then you'd have to buy the pay-per-view. So I'm not a Fight Pass subscriber. So it being on ESPN Plus is great because I do want to see Milner versus Muhammad. I do want to see Jackson versus Sukumthal. And I do want to see Brandon Davis versus Randy Costa. You mentioned, and I kind of had a feeling you would mention Wilson Hayes versus Alejandro Pantoja. But there, you know, the rest of the prelims, there's not just a ton that sticks out to me. But let's get
in. Well, dude, the early prelims, I'm more excited for than the prelims.
Oh, totally. Oh, totally agree with you on that one. I mean, I just... you know, Jalen Turner's a guy I've had a chance to talk to, you know, countless times. You know, he's taken on Matt Frivola. You know, Max Griffin has you know, been in the UFC for some time now. But, yeah, I would agree with you. The early prelims are much more interesting to me than the preliminary card on Fight Pass and ESPN+.
Definitely, definitely. As if you're an astute observer of mixed martial arts and I put a gun to your head, I was like, listen, man, you're only allowed to watch one of these four or five mix-ups. You're absolutely watching the early prelims. I mean, even if I tell you Hayes and Pantoja is the good one, I mean, it's just, yeah. So for 236, man, God, it's going to suck to put down my credit card and buy this one. I'm excited for Holloway Poirier, Jason. I am. I cannot wait to see that fight. Is it nonsensical that Holloway is doing taking on this fight? Absolutely. I'm excited for Gaslam Adesanya, but I'm going to be feeling real empty inside. When I paid the money for this pay-per-view, and I'm just watching OSP take on Krylov, and Dwight Grant taking on Alan Chaboyan, and Eric Anders versus Khalil Roundtree. And again, no disrespect to these guys, but it's a lot of money to buy a UFC pay-per-view. It really is.
You're going to be sitting there at 9 p.m. Central Time for you, 10 p.m. East Coast Time for me, and you're going to be sitting there going, okay, can we just get to the co-main event?
Totally.
But look, it's like you said earlier, and I said, I am all in on the main event, co-main event. I love the main event fight. It's a rematch. If you go back and watch their very first fight, both these guys look like teenagers when they fought, especially Max Holloway. But obviously, Max, you know, comes in as a featherweight champion. It, you know, and it's not like Max Holloway is a guy who he's a big 45er. It wouldn't surprise me on fight night that these guys pretty much look the same size. I was watching Dan Hardy's breakdown of this fight, and he brings up a lot of great points. One of the points that I thought they brought up was really interesting is there are times where Dustin is, has his opponent's back against the cage, and he's in a very square stance. So it's all, it's hooks and uppercuts. That's what you're going to get. You just can't throw a jab in that spot and maximize what you can do with it, which may be something that Max Holloway can take advantage of. I truly feel that we're going to see Dustin try to grapple a little more. But, these are two guys that, they're strikers. I think Max Holloway is the better striker, the more diverse striker than Dustin Poirier. I look at this fight and I go, how does each guy win the fight? And to me, for Dustin Poirier to win the fight, he's got to implement a grappling style to wear down Max Holloway. But it's tough for me I think Max is going to win this fight.
Yeah, it is crazy to think that when they fought, you mentioned how they were kids. Like, Max Holloway literally had a record of 4-0 as he took on Dustin Poirier in his UFC debut. Like, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. I think Max Holloway must have been 14 years old when he fought at UFC 143 in 2012. And, he got the loss there. And it's just like, man, how things have changed. You could have always seen the potential for this guy. And, Dustin Poirier, man, he's really kicked it into high gear lately, especially with that big-time win over Eddie Alvarez, which maybe hasn't aged as well as one would expect with Eddie's recent foray into 1FC. But Poirier is one of the most dangerous lightweights on the planet, incredibly well-rounded, a guy who really, really responds well and scrambles both on the feet and in grappling, and super lethal, and a fighter you can't count out, and definitely one of the best guys, and a tough test for Max Holloway. Like you, man, I'm putting my chips in the Max Holloway pile just because at this point in time, even though he is moving up to 155 from the featherweight division, Max Holloway is currently fighting like one of the best fighters on the planet. With his wins over Aldo, his win over Pettis, and of course the most recent victory over Brian Ortega, currently Max Holloway is fighting like an all-time great. And when a guy is in that type of rhythm, it can absolutely be stopped at any point. And Dustin Poirier looks like the perfect kind of guy to put a halt to such momentum, welcoming him to the weight class and getting his second victory over Max Holloway. It's still hard for me to look at Holloway. Look at how he strikes and how successful he is there. His ability, I think, to, if he does necessarily get taken down or put in positions where he doesn't want to be in, Max Holloway absolutely has the tools in his toolbox to revert that and get back to where he wants to have this fight play out. So, like you, Jason, I think it's going to be close. But I think Max Holloway is going to win the fight against Dustin Poirier.
In the co-main event, Kelvin Gastelum versus Israel Adesanya, the one thing that sticks out to you about this fight, and when you talk about that path to victory, is Kelvin Gastelum has to overcome this 9-inch reach disadvantage he has in this fight. 71 inches for him, Israel Adesanya, 80 inches. The question is, does Kelvin Gastelum, go back to his wrestling here to try to take Israel down? I mean, I'll preface this to you. If you had to pick an underdog to win on Saturday night, is it Dustin Poirier or Kelvin Gastelum?
To me, it's absolutely Kelvin Gastelum, because I think I'm picking him to win straight up against Israel Adesanya, Jason. I think Kelvin Gastelum's the best guy at Adesanya's spot, and it's not even close. And the problem for Israel going up against Kelvin, to me, is how spectacular Gastelum is in just about every facet of the game. I think Kelvin, if he doesn't get put away, which is possible, and you mentioned the reach advantage, and I think that's going to be apparent early on, and I could feel like an idiot if Adesanya completely destroys this guy on the feet because of that reach. But I do think Gastelum's going to be able to react well to what Adesanya brings to the table and matriculate his game plan. So Jason, I don't even care if he's a slight underdog here. I am picking Kelvin Gastelum to win this co-main event.
And it should be noted, he's fought a guy who's had that type of reach before in Neil Magny. Now, he did lose that fight back in 2015 by split decision, and pretty much at 185 pounds, every time that Kelvin Gastelum fights, he's going to be at some sort of reach disadvantage. But, man, I totally agree with what you said. This is by far the best fighter that Israel has fought. There's no doubt on that, but, man, I'd probably feel more confident picking Dustin Poirier than I would be Kelvin Gastelum.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what do you look at? You think in this fight, Adesanya is just going to be a hell of a on the feet. It's just going to be way too much for Gastelum.
I just think he keeps him at range and doesn't let Kelvin get in range to strike anything. To me, Kelvin's got to wrestle. I can't see a path to victory for Kelvin Gastelum where he doesn't wrestle.
I totally understand that for sure, Jason. I think he's going to be able to do that. But you're right. Like I can't expect him to play the inside game against a guy in Adesanya who has two huge advantages. It's the physical advantage, the reach, which is such a huge part of the striking. Don't tell Stefan Struve. And number two, Adesanya is a damn good striker. Straight up. One of the best strikers we see right now in this current weight class. And so your analysis on what it's going to take for Kelvin Gastelum to win is spot on. Unless he does get lucky with a big-time hook or an uppercut inside the guard of Adesanya, the path to victory is wrestling, and I do think that's where he's going to have success there. But, yeah, I mean, these are two close fights for sure, and you can't go wrong picking the upset either way.
And you got to think that from a UFC perspective, they probably got to be rooting for Israel to win this fight because then you set up a title unification fight against Robert Whittaker down in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're talking, finally, for the love of God. Look, man, I'd be excited if Robert Whittaker took on a broomstick in Australia. This poor guy. It's been impossible for him to get down inside a cage in Australia. So sign me up for that. I would absolutely watch that, Jason. But to be honest with you, again, I would watch Robert Whittaker take on a broomstick. Hell, yeah, I'd watch Robert Whittaker take on Ovin St. Preux. I mean, I don't know. I just want to see the poor guy fight.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, as much as I'd love to see Israel versus Bobby Knuckles, Max Holloway-Khabib is another fight that really interests me a lot.
Absolutely, man. That one does. It's just unfortunately for Max Holloway, if he does get this win, he could accept that Khabib fight. And it's a lot like, oh man, it's just impossible for Khabib or anyone not to accept the Conor fight at the last second. And to be like, all right, I'll fight Max Holloway. Oh, who's that ringing? Conor McGregor? You don't even see Conor McGregor when he calls. You see multi-million dollars when Conor calls. That's what that is. That's just money. Money calling. So for Max, man, if he does get that win and, you know, he puts that interim title around his waist or whatever, that means nothing. Because the most important interim title, the most important thing in MMA isn't that, it's how much money you can draw. And unfortunately, Conor holds all the cards, even though he literally commits crimes on what seems like a weekly basis.
I'll tell you one thing. I was watching the media luncheon that Kelvin Gastelum had last week, and you know, they were talking about how he was, you know, walk around the town in Australia, and he basically noted, he's like, look, the reason I did that is I wanted to make sure that I found myself still in a title fight in his next fight. So it kind of worked out for him in what he did, but yeah, to me, it's all about these top two fights. You know, after that, man, there's not a ton that interests me. I'm just being honest. Anders Roundtree, I think someone gets knocked out in the first round. Jobwen Grant, I think that if a stoppage comes, this comes late in the fight where one of the fighters just gets, you know, worn down. OSP and Nikita Krylov, man, that's that'd be interesting if that fight hits the mat based on what those two guys like to do on the ground. But, man, outside of that, oof. Not a lot that interests me, just being honest. But I'll be watching on Saturday night because of the main event and co-main event.
Yeah, and of course, we'll watch all the fights. And look, a lot of times with these prelims, it's things you don't see coming before the event that end up being talking points afterwards. So if anything spectacular happens, we see some great performances or a phenomenal fight, we'll absolutely talk about it next week.
It's one of those cards you feel like that it doesn't have a ton of buzz outside the main event, co-main event, but the rest of those fights are ultimately going to deliver, and that seems to happen more times than not. Of course, here momentarily, you're going to hear my conversation with Greg Rebell, who's a striking coach for Randy Costa. Of course, Randy will be in the opening fight of the early prelims as he takes on Brandon Davis. Of course, Randy, 4-0 in his career, got this opportunity a couple weeks ago, so you hear that. Plus, had a chance to talk to John Castaneda. You'll hear that here momentarily. Of course, this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast is presented by Roman. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. Recently had to go to the doctor, had a little bit of an issue in my right ear. You know, tried the whole home remedy thing, but got to the point, said, okay, gotta go see the doctor and get everything checked out. And, you know, look, you got to go see the doctor at time, but, you know, when you talk about not wanting to see the doctor, the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created a simple, secure way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online.
Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, Jason, there are no freaking waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. That is what I'm talking about. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Let me repeat that. All you got to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. You guys, go online. Get checked out by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle. But with Roman, it's really, really easy. So please take care of it.
For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. For a free online visit, GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And now it is time for the interview portion of the show. Up first, you'll hear my conversation with Greg Rebello, and then you'll hear my conversation with John Castaneda. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's got a little bit of a busy weekend this weekend as he'll be with Randy Costa, who this is how Greg is the person I found out about Randy Costa from. Greg hit me up. It's like, hey, man, we got this young guy. You know, he's on the fast track here. And crazy thing is, when I spoke to Randy about, maybe about a month ago, and he talked about being on that fast track as they were preparing to fight on the Cage Titan show last week. Did you think that the UFC offer could come?
See, I thought it was going to be more of a contender series spot. You know, I didn't think that it was immediately going to be in the UFC. But again, you never know. How many times have you seen guys that were signed up for the contender series that got short notice calls? So I wasn't totally shocked, you know, but, you know, I seriously was getting prepared to, you know, train him for a summer series fight in the, you know, on the contender series out in Vegas.
Yeah. And obviously he's a guy that he loves his head kicks. Like, he loves head kicks. Like, he'll straight. The other thing that's comical about Randy, he'll say, it's not a fight if it can't fit in a IG video.
It's true. We kind of, so me and the coaches, you know, Joe Lozon and Chris Palmquist, every time he would fight for Cage Titans, you know, that's what we would do. We'd get our Instagrams out and somebody in the back would tape it and would see, you know, do you think this is going to be able to fit in a full video? And I'd always bet. And he always finished it earlier. So,
what, as you've seen his development, is there something you've noticed about him of how he's evolved, you know, as a martial artist?
He was always good. He was always a good wrestler. You know, he's always had that strong kickboxing background. I just think now he's sharpening his tools. And the biggest thing I think is his confidence in certain situations and certain combinations and certain things that he throws. You know, I think confidence is such a big key. You know, you have to believe in yourself and you're going to believe in the stuff that your coaches are showing you. And he definitely believes in the striking and the things that we've been working on, because I can tell you that a lot of the stuff that, you know, he's finished fights with is stuff that we've worked on specifically. So I think it's his confidence. Like, it's definitely going up. And it's not just in his fights. It's in sparring. He's sparring a lot of high-level guys. And he's landing a lot of stuff that, you know, that guys have been working on with him. So it's he's definitely a confident kid. And he has every reason, you know, to be.
I mean, obviously, you're on both sides here, being a coach and also being as a fighter. For you, did the confidence take a while for you to feel like to have that high level of confidence that he has?
Yeah, you know what I mean? It definitely did. You know, I didn't have that, like, you know, he's had a karate and a kickboxing background. So I feel like he was, you know, at his age, I was just getting started. You know what I mean? So he's kind of already, he's in the UFC now, you know what I mean? So it's a little bit different. So yeah, it took me a while to get that confidence, like in my striking, you know what I mean? I wasn't until I was probably 30, you know, 30, 31, where I really started to get confident in my striking. So, yeah, it definitely took me longer, you know, to become like him, which is stinks for me, but it's good for him, man.
Now, the last time I talked to Randy, we were talking about pre-fight rituals and the fact of these three songs that he always plays in the back. And he tells me how he sings these songs. Like, what's going through your mind when you hear him singing?
Is it, you know, it's usually, should I punch this kid in the mouth? Or should I just, you know, hold Mitt's form and leave him alone, you know? But everybody's different, man. People do some weird stuff. You know, he likes to listen to country music. Or I don't even know. He has so many girl fans and groupies that I can't even hear what entrance song he comes out to when he walks out. So, you know, he likes to come out to the country music. Everybody's different, man. Brennan Ward used to sit in the back and listen to Ric Flair reruns on YouTube. So everybody's different, man. It's just, yeah.
Do you got any?
I guess in the back. I don't know.
Do you have any unique pre-fight rituals?
No, and I do like a really long warm up, like a slow and steady warm up, and I'm pretty cool and casual in the back, you know, until it's time to go. Then you kind of put the game face on and then let's do it, you know.
Obviously, you and the team have looked at Brandon Davis here. Is there something that sticks out to you why you guys like this matchup so much?
Brandon prefers to stand up, you know what I mean? So I think that anytime we get somebody like that, it's exciting for me because I like stand-up fights and I like to kind of watch a lot of video and try to see, you know, how we can pick somebody apart and we can, you know, notice certain things that we can capitalize on. So for me, it was exciting, you know, and I think it's a great matchup for it's going to be a fun fight to watch for sure because, you know, Brandon's he's a gritty guy and he's about as tough as they come and he goes straight forward and he forces you to get into a fist fight. And Randy's not scared of that. You know what I mean? Randy loves that too. So it's going to be interesting. You know, with me, I've just been working on, you know, making sure Randy's prepared and kind of keeps cool. And it's going to be fun.
Brandon, I guess you'd almost say his back's against the wall here. You know, he's lost back-to-back fights. He's lost three of four. Do you, as a coach, do you look at that and say, we might be facing a guy who's going to take more chances in the fight, and we just got to kind of pick and choose our spots or where we take our take advantage?
I said that to Randy the other day. I'm like, you know, when you back a raccoon into a corner, you know, he's going to come. He's going to fight his way out. I think Brandon's going to come out, and I think he's going to be super aggressive. And not only is he going to try to win, I think he's going to try to win impressively. You know what I mean? He wants to keep his job. And if he goes out and loses or if he has a bad performance, he's probably not going to keep his job, you know? So anytime somebody's back's against the wall, I always expect the best out of him. So that's exactly what, you know, I've been expecting of this the whole time, you know, since we got the fight.
I did, right before we started talking to this, I went on Best Fight Odds website and saw Randy's an underdog in this one. You like that?
Yeah, he should be. I mean, he's only 4-0. He's what, 3 or 4-0 as an amateur. He's 4-0 as a pro. He's fought absolutely nobody near the skill level of Davis, and we know that, you know. But again, like Randy got brought up here quick. Like, Joe Lozon definitely didn't think that Randy was going to be brought in so fast. That's why, you know, you work your guys up, you know, through the levels as far as who they're going to fight. You know, Randy had a fight on Cage Titans that would have happened this past weekend, and it was against a guy that was, you know, he was a higher level up from anybody he's fought. You know, you build your guys up, you build their confidence, and that's how it goes. But I knew that Randy was going to be in the UFC. It wasn't a surprise to me. I've seen him spar with guys that are in the UFC, and he does really well. And the kid belongs there. You know, whether anybody wants to say it or not, I'll say it. And the thing I like about Randy is he's a humble kid. He doesn't get ahead of himself. He's not cocky. He just loves to fight and he loves to compete. And I don't know a harder working person in and outside of the gym than Randy. You know, the kid just, he's one of those kids where I'm like, dude, you see that exit door? I want you to run into it and get the hell out of here. Cause like sometimes he just will overtrain or overdo it. You know what I mean? So he's a special kid for sure. So he deserves the spot.
You know, obviously you've been a part of UFC fight weeks, you know, throughout your time. Will you say anything to Randy about like, look, this is what you can expect during fight week, so nothing is a surprise?
Yeah, we've talked to him about stuff like that. Honestly, that's half the reason that I wanted him to start doing interviews with you guys. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you got to get used to this media because you're going to be surrounded by it on UFC fight weeks. I'm like, you're going to be sleeping in the hotel with coaches and buddies. Like, you know, you're going to see your opponent a million times before you guys face off at the weigh-in. I'm like, it's just stuff that you got to get used to. On a local fight, you just show up to the weigh-in. That's the first time you see your opponent. There's really no media. You know, with CES, I think there is. But, you know, Cage Titans, there wasn't a lot of media. They're starting to pick that stuff up. But it's definitely different. You know, when a guy like Randy goes from just showing up at the weigh-in, I see my opponent, we shake hands, we show up fight night, to having a whole week build-up worth of media, worth of the weigh-ins and the face-offs and all that kind of stuff. It's definitely different. But again, he's a guy that thrives on stuff like that. You know, he loves the media. You see how he is in his interviews. That's just how he is in general as a person, you know? So I don't think it's going to affect him at all.
Yeah, I think his personality throughout this week will really shine. I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be talking about him going into this. There's another guy that I know you're very familiar with that's on this card. That's Andre Sukumta, who, you know, I think one of the most interesting things about him is how he's split up his camp between Florida and Rhode Island. He was on Tyson Chartier's podcast and really opened up just his life story, which I've interviewed Andre countless times. I didn't really know the complete story. For you, you've seen his career develop. Do you see something different in him now as opposed to, say, when he won the CES title?
I have known Andre longer than any of these guys. You know what I mean? I've known him longer than Tyson. I've known him longer than anybody. You know, Andre was a guy that, Jesus, before he even made his amateur debut, I think he was 16 or 17. You know, he used to walk out with me. My first title fight when I was probably 5-2 or 6-2, he walked out with me. You know, this little Asian kid walked out in the front, carried the bucket. And, you know, and I remember him always telling me, you know, I'm going to be a UFC fighter one day and blah, blah, blah. And I would just be like, yeah, shut up, kid, you know. But he was always a really tough kid. He was always a good athlete. And, you know, when he went through all that stuff in his life, man, I was there. You know, I know him and his wife, like, very well. They're very close friends of mine and my family. So Andre is like a little brother to me, man. Like, I've known him longer than anybody, and I've been there. And it was, you know, one of those things where he was a teenager, man. I think the kid was still, you know, 20 years old, and he had to become a man a lot faster than I did, and he did. And, you know, so I'm proud of that kid. Like, he grew up faster than any young kid I've ever met in my life, you know what I mean? And to see the man that he's become today is something that, you know, something that I'm proud of, man, because I've known Andre for so long and he's such a good kid, man. I love that kid, you know, so it's awesome, man.
It was really interesting. Part of that podcast, he kind of talked about like where he kind of flipped the switch, you know, where, you know, he knew his back was against the wall in the UFC and everything's really turning around. I mean, is that something as an athlete, you kind of, you understand where he's coming from, where it's just like everything just starts to kind of click?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, you can see a different intensity in Andre's eyes when he comes into the gym, because it's not just him. He's not like Randy. Randy doesn't have a family. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have a mortgage like Andre does. You know, Andre's got two little boys at home and a wife that he's, you know, she's been at home with the two kids for the last 6 weeks. And she doesn't have a ton of help down there in Florida. Most of his family is up here, you know. So it's tough. He's not just fighting for him or for his teammates or for his coaches. You know, he's got the whole town of Woonsocket on his back, and he's got his wife and his kids on his back, you know. Like, I'll tell you what, man. I don't think I've ever seen a fighter more popular in my life than Andre Sukumov, man. When I fought, I think, Keith Bell, I won by TKO in the first round. And when I got up to, like, cheer, the whole crowd was chanting Andre. They didn't even give a crap about me, you know what I mean? And when he won that title, they had a parade in his hometown the next day, like you would for the president. Like, it's... he has a following unlike anybody I've ever seen, and he takes pride in that, and you know, and he loves like his support system. So it's, I know that it's important to him, especially knowing that if he does lose this fight, you know, he could be released. You know, like, he's had a different intensity in his camp, and he knows what he's getting himself into, and he's a tough kid, man. You can't break that kid. Like, that kid has been through more than I've ever had in my life, and he's come out where he is. Like, you're not going to break a guy like Andre. It's not going to happen, so I'm not worried about it.
I remember hearing the story when he won the CES title, where he's in the back, like, getting changed, whatnot, and the casino personnel came to him and goes, hey, can you come outside and tell your fans to leave? Because they were just, like, I guess, congregating right outside the arena.
I was there, so I fought that night. So I was in the back talking to Andre and his wife, and I remember we all walked out, like, we all showered and walked out. And when you first walk into Twin River, they have that giant lobby with the escalators, and you can – it was capacity. There was had to have been 1,000 people out there chanting Andre, like, Andre, when they walk. It was crazy. I couldn't get my phone out fast enough to record it because I was just in amazement. You know what I mean? When I fight, I have 3 people clapping for me. Like, nobody gives a crap, you know? Like, but he walks out, and there's all these people. Like I said, the support from him, it's crazy. It's crazy, man. I've never seen anything like it, but – anytime that he fought for CES and he won with a highlight reel, though, I mean, his fans would stay and wait till he walked out. You know, it was because, you know, Andre, he's a pretty boy. He's got to get the suit and the fancy, you know, he showers himself up and puts cocoa butter on to make sure his, you know, skin looks tan. So who knows?
So you're saying that's not your style. Is that what you're saying?
Not my style. I show up to the fight dressed like this. Dude. I come ready to fight. I'm not as fashionable as Andre, I guess.
But by the way, you know, I have not heard any digs from you about my lightning recently. You're pretty quiet about that.
Well, what do you want me to say?
I'll tell you this. I think the Lightning had the most pressure.
Is Kaloran on their fourth line? The guy scored his 20th goal of the season. Like, you might as well just wrap it up. And not only that, is you beat my Orlando Magic yesterday. The Orlando Magic beat my Celtics yesterday. So,
I'm telling you, go look at the Magic since January against the top 3 teams in the East. It's crazy. We can't beat the Knicks, but we can beat the Raptors.
And the Celtics. Trust me, I'm nervous. You guys, they're doing really well, man. You guys got a good young core. Watch Markelle Fultz, who's going to become a superstar in Orlando. You're going to be wearing his jersey probably by next year.
Look, I love that trade because it's low risk, high reward.
Yeah. You guys gave up a nobody for him. You know, he could potentially, if he can get he'll get it together. He's a young kid. He's obviously going through a lot. And for somebody to have a lot of that pressure on them at a young age where, you know, your expectation as the number one pick is to be a superstar immediately, he's going to be good. The kid's good. The skill set's there. And he's got a good fit in Orlando. He's going to be good. Like, you guys got a gem. It's going to happen.
Look, I'll say this on the Lightning. I think the Lightning had the most pressure on them going into the playoffs.
Listen, the Lightning could start their fourth line and still make it through the first 3 rounds. So let's be realistic. How many 40 goal scorers? 3? Crazy.
Oh, I know. It's nuts. I mean, I tell people this all the time. You would never believe Tampa's a hockey town, but it's been a hockey town for 15 years. I mean, it's crazy. I've always said this. The best sporting event I ever went to, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Nothing like it.
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, it's you're on the edge of your seat every shot.
The whole time, of course.
It's a really expensive go-to.
I was just hockey talk on the radio this morning, and some guy called in, and he was from Tampa Bay. And he's like, you know that it's bad when the only thing that we complain about in Tampa Bay is Ryan Callahan and Dan Girardi. Because those are the two worst players on the team. And those guys would be, you know, big-time role players on the Boston Bruins right now. Ryan Callahan would probably be on our second line. And he's like the only complaint you guys have in Tampa Bay.
No, they were saying, my buddy's like, hey, you want to go to the first round of the playoffs? I go, I'm going to save my money for the later rounds.
Why would you? I would just spend on it and collect the money, and then you can buy fancy seats the second and third round.
Exactly. But safe travels to Atlanta this weekend. Good luck to you and the entire team there. And we look forward to seeing when that when the first fight out of retirement is for you.
It's gonna be June 7th. At Twin River. CES is doing so. They're doing a lot of back to back shows. They're doing a show May 31st again in Connecticut in Hartford. That venue, I don't know if you saw it, it was really cool. So I know they're going to go back there because, you know, obviously they have a lot of fighters from Connecticut. And then a week later, they're going to go back to Twin River. So
I think the thing's going to be interesting about now Connecticut, the State Athletic Commission now, you know, regulating MMA, how much that helps all the fighters in the Northeast. Now they're being, you know, another state where we maybe see more promotions pop up at.
And there's so many guys that come from Connecticut that travel up here to Rhode Island or to Massachusetts to fight. Like, there's a lot of them, you know, so there's so much talent in Connecticut. Their first show was a home run there, you know what I mean? And it went pretty smoothly. There wasn't like too many issues. You know, for having a new commission and all that stuff. So they're obviously going back there in May, you know, before they even come back to Twin River. So it's definitely exciting. And there's a lot of guys to fill the cards down there. So it's pretty cool.
I'm waiting to see if there's a promotion that's going to put Nick Newell in the main event in Connecticut.
See, I think CES will.
Because he'll pack the place.
Yeah. He'll pack any place. He'll pack a place in Massachusetts, never mind Connecticut.
Just put him and Bissett, main event, co-main event.
So that's when CES puts, you know, Nick Newell as a main event and Matt Bissett as a co-main event. Good luck getting a ticket to going there, huh? They probably won't give me a ticket to going there. Huh? I don't blame them, but.
Exactly, man. Greg, man, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Social media, my Twitter is GRibello73, and my Instagram is GRibsMMA23. You can go on there tonight because you're going to see me beating up Mitch Raposo and Jorgen. And all those other bombs from Top Game Management.
You're joining me now here on the MMA Report. A man's going to step inside competition. A first time in almost exactly 1 year. John Castaneda, part of Combat Days 34 on Friday night, April the 13th. John, appreciate the time. Of course, we were supposed to see you back in October last year against Eric Perez. Ultimately, you know, unable to get to that fight. So, like, how would... Like, as you think about when you had that fight didn't come together, and kind of like, how do you sum up the last year for yourself?
Boring, to be honest. The last year, it's been, you know, there's one other time in my career where I've had a year layoff, and it was right. I had cut ties with Combate Americas a few years back, and I came back. I fought Chris Beal in his hometown, and that was a good fight for me, and I expect the same this fight. You know, it's been a year layoff, but I haven't been sitting on the couch by any means. I've been training my ass off. I've started working with a strength and conditioning coach. I've never in my life done that in camps. I think that this year, I mean, to put it short, it's been boring, and I'm ready to get back in the cage.
Something you said there kind of really jumped out to me about this is the first time you worked with a strength conditioning coach in camp. Outside looking in, that seems extremely odd.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the thing with that is I've always just, not that I haven't taken my strength and conditioning serious, but you know, I would do my own lifting outside of the gym. This time I just took it more serious. You know, we're not getting any younger in this sport, and it's time to take it full blast. You know, I'm 27. I'm still pretty young in this sport. I got a lot of fights for my age, but I was ready to just fully commit that extra time and that extra effort. I hired a strength and conditioning coach. I hired a dietitian. You know, I'm ready to get this ball rolling for sure.
In terms of, you know, incorporating the strength and conditioning inside your camp, how do you feel at this point, in comparison to when you had that fight back in April of last year?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So April of last year, I, at this point, weight-wise, everything was the same, basically. Everything was the same. I just feel this time, I feel a lot less fatigued during my weight cut week. This is my weight cut week. I feel a lot less fatigued, more energy. I feel stronger. I feel faster. I just feel a lot better overall. And that's not only with my strength and conditioning coach, but also implementing my dietitian as well. They both work out of Twin Cities Orthopedics. So they're training the Minnesota Vikings here out of Minnesota, you know, so they obviously know what they're doing. Obviously I'm just a part of the journey. So
your opponent Marcelo has been on a roll here, you know, winning seven of his last eight, but do you feel like the fact that, you know, he hasn't seen the evolution of your game over the last year, that is ultimately one of your bigger advantages heading into this one?
That absolutely. And also the fact that I feel like I've you know, he is on a roll. He's, you know, like you said, he's won seven of his last eight. I feel like he hasn't really fought the level of competition as his, for example, his last two fights, they've been tough guys, but I've watched the fights over and over and over. Those guys are very slow, very telegraphic. You know, I'm going to bring a whole nother pace to Marcelo. I'm not saying that it's going to be an easy fight, but me and Marcelo we're both quick. We're both high pace, high energy. I know that I have the advantages wrestling, grappling. And I'm sure he thinks he has the advantages striking, but it's something that he hasn't seen in a while. I know he's fought high level guys, high, quick speed, quick agility guys, but it's been a while for him. So, I'm going to be ready to give it all I got.
What do you think the key is for you to get him out of being that high pace fighter?
Pressure. I've been working a lot this camp on pressure, getting the inside position. A lot of the times, especially with my last fight against Jose Aldo, you know, that one still doesn't sit right with me, my man. I had five takedowns in the fight. He had zero. I had a knockdown in the third. He didn't have any. But I think what won him the fight is those kicks. I was more so sitting on the outside in kicking range, and he would throw the kicks regardless of whether they were landing or not or doing damage or not, which they weren't. That's scoring points for the judges. You know, that looks good for the judges, him constantly throwing kicks, you know, and throwing combinations as well. But I just need to work more on being a pressure fighter, in your face fighter, and kind of closing that distance, because then it kind of eliminates a lot of the things, like stylistically for Marcelo and for fighters like Jose Aldo and stuff like that.
I can see the reaction you have still in your last fight. Like, is it bad taste in your mouth still?
100%. I mean, and it's not, it's a blessing, but at the same time, you know, I absolutely is a bad taste in my mouth. Like I said, it was a split decision loss. One judge had it 29-28 him, one judge had it 29-28 me, and then the third judge had it 30-27 me. Or I'm sorry, yeah, one judge had it 30-27 me. And then the other two, like, split, obviously, 29-28. But still, I mean, it just didn't sit right with me. I thought I did enough to get the win. But like I said, hats off to Jose. I know Gustavo just beat him. Gustavo Lopez, somebody that I actually fought in Verona, New York, a couple of years back. I did beat him. I had the worst weight cut of my life. But those days are over, man. The bad weight cuts are gone and done. So,
is it because of the education that you've learned, you know, since that fight about what you need to do, the proper ways to make weight?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's also been a year since I've made the weight, but I've been working, like I said, with a dietitian and my strength conditioning coach. We got it down to a science. But yes, ever since that Gustavo Lopez fight, it's definitely been an education for me, trying to learn more about the body and the hydration process and the dehydration process. You know, I wasn't doing it right up until that fight. Ever since that fight, though, I've been doing it pretty correctly.
Are you walking around at a different weight now as opposed to, you know, previously?
Nope. So the good thing about that is that I'm walking around the same weight, but I'm a lot leaner. For example, let's say when I'm getting down to 160 for my weight camp or for my fight camp, let's say it was, I mean, the last time I saw 160, I was maybe 3 weeks ago, right? Noticeably different 160 in my previous camps to 160 this camp. It's just a different, you know, I feel a lot better at that weight. I felt stronger, like I said, stronger, faster, leaner. It was a leaner weight. It was a leaner 160 as opposed to like a kind of like a chubbier 160, you know?
Of course, you know, the last two fights haven't gone your way. You mentioned about the last fight that's still kind of eating at you. I mean, do you feel like, is there anything you want to prove to yourself in this fight?
I mean, absolutely. It's all, I think that circumstantial, for me, it's all circumstantial. So obviously my last fight was Jose Aldo. He was a last minute replacement fight, literally 2 days before I was supposed to fight Mark Gomez, a guy who I had been preparing for stylistically. I had already beat him in that Copa Combate. You know, I got thrown that curveball and, you know, he upset me. Jose Aldo upset me. The fight before that, It was a tournament final after I had already fought two grueling fights in one night in actually a matter of 2 hours. Like I said, it's all circumstantial. I want to prove that when I can focus on one guy, I can go back to my old winning ways. You know, like I was on a 10-fight winning streak before that when I had single opponents to focus on, single styles to focus on. And I knew, you know, a big part of it too is visualization for me. So I visualize a lot. I don't do it with any visualization coaches or anything like that. I just do it on my own. But I think that that kind of plays a big role in that for me. And visualizing the fight with Marcelo, I've been doing that ever since Copa Combate. You know, we were both expected to meet in the finals. So I've been expecting to see him for a while now.
So when we're talking about visualizing how the victory comes through in this matchup, are we talking like you've probably thought of this 1,000 different ways of how you ultimately get the win?
1,000 different ways of what could happen, what he's going to do, what I'm going to do, different scenarios. And yes, all of them leading to me being victorious, of course.
I mean, is it one of those things that it's just as you've been in this game for as long as you have, of understanding that, you know, you got to prepare for, well, what if I find myself in this position? How do I respond? I mean, how much of that is your training?
Oh, 100% of it. I mean, not 100% of it, but like I was just saying, a lot of it is visualization, but situations like that is 90% training. You know, I'm especially the intensive part of your camp, the last four or five weeks of your camp. My coach really breaks it down what Marcelo is good at, what he's not so good at, what my opponents, you know, in general are good at and aren't good at. And then we put ourselves in those situations. Let's say he, you know, in previous fights, he's knocked down opponents and finished with a TKO. So I'll start in positions similar to that. He's taking opponents back. Well, you know, we start situations from that. And that's just not for Marcelo. That's just in general. That's how you should be training every single situation. You know, if you're a shark in the gym and you're never getting taken down, well, all of a sudden in a fight, you get taken down. What are you going to do? You know, you haven't been training it. You got to train every single aspect, every single scenario of wherever a fight can go.
And of course, it all goes down on Friday night, April the 12th, Combate 34. John, man, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media. And of course, those sponsors that are helping you out for this one.
Yeah, absolutely, my man. First and foremost, thanks for having me on the show. You guys can find me on Instagram at @JohnCastaneda_, Twitter at @SexyMexy135. And then guys, I just want to thank two people, my management team, Iridium Sports Agency, Jason House helped me out, helped me get fights and keeping me active. And then my home gym, the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy, with Coach Greg Nelson and all my training partners. And then you, of course, again, for having me on the show.
And there was my conversations with Greg Rubello and John Castaneda. A lot of interesting insight by Greg, talking about Randy Costa, also talking about Andre Sigurthon, of course, John Castaneda, who fights on Friday at Combate 34. Of course, if you have a Zone subscription, you can watch Combate Americas on that platform as well. So appreciate both those guys giving me some opportunity this week to talk to them about things going on with them. Of course, be sure to go over to the MMAReport.com to check out other interviews that I do have. I had a really fascinating conversation with Jordan Williams, who steps back inside the Bellator cage here in 2 weeks at Bellator 220. And it's one of those interviews where I think I only asked one question actually about the fight. You know, we started talking about his failed drug tests after his contender series bout for marijuana, and he's got an autoimmune disease, and he talked about how much, you know, marijuana, it's a true medical benefit for him. And look, I am pro marijuana, so like after I do this show, I'm going to go produce our cannabis podcast. I am very pro marijuana. After talking to Jordan, it opened my eyes to sit there and go, do commissions need to look at marijuana in a different light than the way they do?
I think in a sport where these guys are going out there and punching each other in the face, I think taking a hit from a joint may be something the commission should allow.
Well, I mean, I think there's got to be like a certain threshold
to where you shouldn't be over it? I mean, I don't, you know, should it be more than 150 milligrams per milliliter? Maybe. I think it's one of these things in combat sports that, because, I mean, look, I get there are people who have stigmas about marijuana, okay? But the fact is that it can help people out in various things. You can't deny this. Marijuana does help people, you know? And so I'll tell you, I had a conversation with the executive director about it after my conversation with Jordan Williams. I just said, look, I would love for you just to listen to my conversation with Jordan, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts. Now, I haven't heard back yet, but I just wonder, is, as you know, regulatory bodies, do they need to look at marijuana more extensively than just, oh, here's his drug test and this was his, you know, his level?
Yeah, I think so too, man. I think for them, the only thing they should be worried about is whether or not the guy's high in the cage.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I totally agree. That's got to be the question mark there. And like, you know. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. But we do want to get into some other MMA news and notes. Of course, on Tuesday, it comes out, TJ Dillashaw suspended 2 years by USADA after testing positive for EPO. You know, I was actually walking into a meeting as this news broke, and my first thought, Daniel, was, well, boy, this adjudication process didn't take long.
I know. It was crazy, man. I mean, it was late March. When TJ kind of vacated his title.
Yeah, it was like, what, 2-3 weeks ago we talked about it on the pod because the news broke TJ like that morning?
Yeah, it feels like 2 or 3 weeks ago we were talking about it. And, man, TJ's career is going – this is huge. This is devastating for his career, and I guess as it should be, right? I mean, you know, you read some of the – God, I read some, like, long tweet from his conditioning coach.
Oh God, yeah,
that was so weird. I didn't even understand what he was trying to say. It was, as a radio personality, if you bring something up, you got to explain it to the viewer. But I can't even begin to explain it. And he was like, it was his conditioning coach, and it was just like, I don't even understand.
Yeah, you're talking about Sam Calavita. You know what?
How would you describe?
Yeah, I started reading it and I was just like, I think there's got to be, you know, I guess first off, you know, if you remember leading up to these matches between Dillashaw and Garbrandt, remember Garbrandt was sitting there and saying this back then, which ultimately makes you, it's one of these things I go, we don't know when TJ first started doing this. We don't know. You would love for TJ just come out and be open and honest about everything. I doubt, you know, it just typically never happens in the fight game when this type of thing happened. But I did, you know, Cody's been calling this. Uriah's been calling this. I mean, it makes me wonder, do we look at Team Alpha Male and say, if you knew a guy was allegedly on something, you know, why weren't you more open on us before? But I loved one of the tweets that Cody had in terms of he said, let's make this clear. The first tweet was this. He goes, all my losses are from fighters that pop for PEDs. I can't stand behind this when I say I'll always be a drug-free athlete. Number one reason is the belief I have in myself. Number two, I respect the game 100%. Twitter rant over. Y'all have a good day. And then he says, let me make this clear. I'm not saying my losses are a direct result of PED convicted fighters. I also fought like a dumbass. I'm like, okay, Cody. I love that tweet. Because he sit there and say, you know what? Yeah, I'm not blaming on PEDs because I could have done, you know, I didn't do the things I should have done.
Yeah, I love Cody Garbrandt for that. He's definitely been the big winner of the weekend despite losing his last three fights. He brings it a hell of a point. I mean, you take away guys who have had issues like that, he's an undefeated fighter. And TJ obviously took him out twice. And, you know, I like it, what you're saying there, with the Team Alpha Male. It's definitely you look at it at, as like the whoever smelt it dealt it theory, right? You know, you smelt it, that means you probably farted one time. But, you know, Cody, I believe him. You know, if we suspended fighters after every time they accused their opponents of being on steroids, we'd have a lot of suspended fighters. That's for damn sure. For Dillashaw, you know, the system caught him and it's working well. And it's clear he's not going to fight this too much. And, you know, it's absolutely derailing his career. I mean, he had to give up his title. It would have been an awful situation for the UFC if he was a double champion. Granted, I guess they were already going to murder the flyweight division in the cold, you know, late hour of the night with a pillow. But it would have been a bad look to have your double champion test, but still your bantamweight guy is off. Unfortunately, he did lose to Cejudo, so that kind of took off a little bit of his luster. But you look at him at 33, he'll come back at 35 years old. It's going to be hard to see how he rebounds. Potentially, Cody Garbrandt could welcome him back into the UFC at this point if you want to book a money fight. But if you're Cody Garbrandt, I think you want to stay away from fighters with a checkered history like that because it's just simply unfair, Jason. So, yeah, I think when you look at this situation, it's you're glad that the system worked today and the UFC can move on. And if you're – I mean, maybe it's just a situation where if a guy has an 8-pack, he should get tested a lot, you know. TJ Dillashaw, and he had an 8-pack of abs. Those are nice. Those are some nice abs, and maybe that's why, you know. I don't know. Dude. Some of these guys have some nice bodies. I mean, I know you can't just look at a guy's body and be like he's juicing, but I mean, TJ did have an 8-pack.
And yeah, that's hard to get. And you look at it, and how much of that was doing this to get down to 125 pounds, and that really, you know, questions a lot of things. We'll see what happens with TJ Dillashaw here. Ellis will come back in January of 2021. Now, Saturday night, I was out at a soccer match and ended up seeing these comments from the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship president, Dave Feldman. Where this was after a fight, goes into the ring and says, quote, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship is a new sport and a brand new company, and we're here for action. And we want action, and we demand action from fighters. We didn't get action in the last fight because Rusty Crowder wanted to run. Therefore, he's getting half his purse to Reggie Pena. Make some noise, Biloxi. That's how we do it at Bare Knuckle. You fight or you don't get paid. And very quickly, he backtracked on those comments real quick. And I sent out this tweet when I saw it on my timeline, and basically paraphrasing what my tweet was you want to know why a majority of states don't want to be in the bare knuckle boxing business? That is a prime example of why state athletic commissions have told bare knuckle, not interested, go somewhere else.
They need a better leader than that. That's disgusting.
Here is the other issue I have heard of why executive directors have no interest in bare knuckle boxing. You're using old MMA fighters to promote your brand that probably should not be fighting anymore. Like I saw Deron Wynn had this tweet where he basically said to his face, like, this is goes out to my family members of saying, if I ever talk about wanting to go in bare knuckle, you know, take me out of it. And this was the exact tweet. He goes, quote, friends and family, if I ever succumb to doing bare knuckle boxing, please, I beg you, please don't allow me to partake, LOL.
Yeah, I hope his friends and family register that because it's true, man. Bare knuckle boxing only gets popular the day after an event, and the article is, you won't believe how messed up these guys look. Like, that's the whole attraction to bare knuckle fighting.
I saw, like, the pictures of Artem Lobov and Jason Knight, and I'm like, look, I love MMA. I've tried watching bare knuckle. I have. It's something I don't care to watch.
I'm not a fan either. I don't want to sound like the way people talk about MMA in the 90s.
No, I mean, like, it's like when I like those comments from the bare knuckle president. Like, to me, I take that as you want to regulate bar fights.
Yeah.
I've seen being in the bar and club industry for as long as I have, I've seen bar fights. I know what they look like. Mm-hmm. And like, and I feel like that's what he's trying to promote. I mean, look, you're going to have states like Mississippi, Wyoming, New Hampshire apparently is going to do it as well. But look, if you go back to the shows I had last summer at the ABC meeting, I had a show with Mike Mazzulli and Andy Foster. Both those guys have zero interest in ever regulating bare knuckle. You're never going to see bare knuckle at Mohegan. You're never going to see bare knuckle in California as long as Andy Foster's the executive director. Of course, I also did a show with Sean Whitlock, who does announcing for bare knuckle. And he understands that there are people that have no interest. It's just, for me, it was great timing to do that event when you didn't have a UFC or Bellator event last weekend, but I'm sorry, I'm not paying $30 to watch that.
Nope, absolutely not. And I'll say it as simple as this. You have a guy who goes inside of a cage and takes away, hypothetically, you know, tries to take away 50% of a guy's purse because he didn't fight the way he wanted to. Man, that guy can get the hell out of combat sports for all I'm concerned. Get the hell out of combat sports.
It's like you want to put guys in a phone booth and have them fight.
Yeah, yeah. It's not my cup of tea, and I hope for most people it's not their cup of tea either, because so, I could be without it.
By the way, speaking of your cup of tea, are you all in on Tito Ortiz fighting again?
No, but I mean, I also predicted it, but yeah, I predicted he would fight in the UFC this year.
So Tito Ortiz, talking to TMZ, says, quote, "I'll probably be fighting in October. After I fought Chuck last year, I thought it would probably be my last one, but my body is intact. Everything is fast. Everything is great. Sparring's been good. Training's been great. And so let's do one more for fun. Just for fun. I have an opponent, and it's going to be fun when we announce it. So it's going to be cool."
I'm excited. Let's go.
Who would be the opponent that would get you excited for fun?
God, that's a hell of a question, Jason. I think him versus Demetrius Johnson would be a very interesting fight.
God, you know what? I didn't think about this, but boy, one championship would make a ton of sense.
Tito versus Vitor.
Dude, can Vitor make 205?
He's been in the heavyweight division.
You know what? That's probably the fight that does make the most sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, man. Look, you know, Tito. God, Tito's gonna fight till for the next 6 years. It's crazy.
Do you think the UFC would even entertain Tito?
Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure, man. I mean, I predicted it, so I hope so. I just think, you know,
Would you say, hey, Tito, you can come in October? You get Johnny Walker.
Okay, that I don't think could actually get legalized. You're going to put Tito against a veteran. Johnny Walker might actually kill him. Like, let's not do that one.
Hey, Tito, we're all about having you fight in. You're going to fight one of our young guns.
Yeah, that to me just seems unsafe. I think you know, maybe a fight against, I don't know, Shogun Hua. I don't know. A fight against Johnny Walker, that just looks like a legalized crime.
Hey, Tito, we figured Thiago Santos is going to lose. How about you fight Thiago Santos after he fights John Jones?
Yeah, that could be Dana's way of
doing that. The one championship thing makes so – because it's the comments Coker made earlier this year made it very clear he had – it seemed like he has no interest in being in the Tito Ortiz business. But, man, one championship does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that's – if we're put where the wise money is, I think it's him fighting in Asia somewhere. One of these cards.
Or maybe that's a card that you could convince TNT to put it on live.
Yeah. Gosh, Tito Ortiz, man. God, it's crazy. I mean, look, he beat Chuck Liddell. Let's not get too crazy. He's 44 years old, and his body's probably aged like he's 64.
Dude, God, that was an awful fight.
Yeah.
I watched that fight after the fact, and I'm like, oh my God, this is awful. This is awful.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, he's bad at MMA.
It was one of those fights that you watched and you said, who are the people around Chuck Liddell that thought this was a good idea?
Jesus, I don't know, whoever has a vested interest in getting money out of him.
Exactly. Whoever was getting a cut of his purse. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Oh. But yeah. That's why you never believe retirements in MMA. Never believe them. Do you, like, am I going to sit here and believe Ross Pearson is truly retired? No.
No. And Tito's definitely one of the veterans of coming out of retirement.
I definitely did first. I hope Ross is truly retired. You know, because I don't think the UFC was going to give him another fight. And maybe the retirement more is based on, you know, he maybe didn't like the other options that are out there. I truly hope he is truly retired, as he says he is, but never, never, never believe retirements in combat sports.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Shout out to Ross Pearson, man. A guy who, man, he has sure got a lot of inside the cage time. I mean, this guy rarely ever fought an UFC fight to end in the first round. Like, I literally think it only happened twice.
Well, I mean, like, think about throughout his career, how many times was he really outclassed?
Not until the late portion of his career.
Yeah, I mean, this was a guy, and he was always a fun fighter to watch. I mean, you knew that, you know, he was going to bring the fight to whoever who he was fighting, but yeah, it's just, you know, his time has passed.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of Ross Pearson, I think of that run he went late in his career where it felt like he would win one and lose one, and win one and lose one. Like, that to me was Ross Pearson. But yeah, an enjoyable striker. He had so many close split decisions in his career. Some big wins. You know, you look at what are his best performances, probably his win over Sam Stout at 185, but he just knocked him clean out. Win over Greg Maynard. hell, one of his first fights in the UFC when he beat Andre Winner to win the Ultimate Fighter 9, one of the two tournaments they did there. So, yeah, nice little career for Ross Pearson.
Yeah. Final thing we want to leave you here on this week's podcast. I saw this story on MMAJunkie.com. It was in relation to a question that was asked during the Bellator press conference in New York City on Tuesday promoting it's Bellator 222, I want to say. And, of course, this is going to be the event you know, with Chael Sonnen and Lyoto Machida. And Neiman Gracie is scheduled to be on this card fighting in the semifinals of the welterweight Grand Prix. Of course, he is scheduled to take on the winner of Rory McDonald versus John Finch, which is 2 weeks from now. And this was what Scott Coker had to say about the winner of that fight having to do a 7-week turnaround. He says, quote, "In all fairness, we've been through this before. When I was working at K1, you had what they call a survivor rule. So if one of the fighters gets hurt, can't advance, then the survivor would continue on in the tournament. But, you know, we're going to keep all our options open. So if one of the fighters can't continue, then we'll just deal with it at that time and we'll make the best decision possible. And talking to both athletes, they both wanted a quick turnaround, so this works in their favor as well. At least that's what they're telling me." Is this fair to Rory McDonald and John Fitch that everyone else has had a pretty lengthy break between quarterfinal and semifinal fights?
Is it fair? Hell no. You would think with the champion, you deserve the advantage, right, of not having to get thrown right in there. But no, it's absolutely not fair. You look at that time frame. That to me is, you need a, you know, that's a fight camp right there. After you have a fight, it takes, you got to recover a little bit. You got to take some time off. So absolutely not fair. Hard no. It's just, that's just how things worked out in terms of the scheduling, and to justify any other ways, I think it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of weird, but I mean, look, you get, you know, I mean, especially, you know, the quick turnaround, you understand that, but just kind of, you know, it's one of those things you say, what's kind of the rush to put the winner of that? Look, I expect Rory to win that fight against John Fitch. But then it kind of, like, let's say Rory wins and he can't turn around June 14th. And you still want to do the semifinals of that card. So what's that mean for the rest of the tournament, since basically then there's no champion in the tournament anymore? So it's kind of a weird situation. It's, you know, that's a Friday night card. I will not be there. I will not be covering it because that's my wedding anniversary. So I'm a smart husband. I know. Yeah, I can't sit there and go, hey, honey, I'm going to leave on our wedding anniversary to go cover fights. No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, hard no. That's not how you – yeah, that is – yeah, Jason, you know how to get it.
I'm waiting for, like, Bellator to reach out to me and say, hey, Jason, you going to be there June 14th? Nah, man. It's my wedding anniversary. Ain't happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ain't happening. I want to stay married. Ain't happening.
Going to Bellator during the weekend of your anniversary is a hard way to not stay married.
I mean, so, look, I can get my wife to say, hey, cool, let's go to New York City for our anniversary. But then say, hey, by the way, on our actual anniversary, I'm going to be gone for like 7 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
not going to play well as she's drinking wine and just scrolling through Facebook.
Duh.
As she sees a picture of you eating wings. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not. I will tell you this: during WrestleMania, I did have some quality chicken wings.
Really? Where'd you have it from?
A place called Duffy's here. They're a franchise type place. I want to say it started somewhere up in the north. They've come down here. They had one of the wing sauces we had was sweet buffalo, which was really good.
Yeah, dude, that sounds freaking delicious. That sounds epic. Sweet buffalo, sign me up for that. I mean, I'm a spicy guy. I'm Hispanic, right? Like, you know. I like the all kinds of Hispanic spices, but sweet buffalo, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, it was like my buddy's like, he's like, oh, try this one. It's kind of hot, and I like hot food. And I had it. I'm like, dude, that's not hot.
Mm.
You know, but I tend to, yeah. I go out, I'm getting hot wings, you know.
Yeah, dude, give me some hot wings. I want to have things coming out of like multiple orifices of my body. As I enjoy wings, you know, wings, eating wings is a spiritual experience, Jason. It's all about deliciousness, but also pain and suffering. It's like walking on hot coals. You come out of it a different man.
Yeah, I don't want the whole pain and suffering. I just want to have good food.
No, man, I love it. I love it. I like the suffering all the way till you got to go to the toilet. You know, that's like the last piece of suffering.
Yeah. Yeah.
People at my work know when I've had wings the day before because I spend the first hour of my shift hovering around the restroom.
Yeah, I know you were telling me about the, you know, you've been a little busy at work, so.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of, yeah, when you work in news, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, we had a crazy deal this past weekend where we had a DPS officer was shot after he made a traffic stop. A man shot him, and the crazy situation. Unfortunately, currently the trooper is actually still alive. So, you know, praying for him and thoughts are with him, but it was a crazy situation, man, because, you know, I went out on the scene. I wasn't, you know, working. There were other photographers working, but when the news bug bites you, when something crazy like that happens, you kind of feel the need to go out and record it. Cause you're almost like recording history. No matter how surreal the scene was. And in this area that hasn't really seen too much, we saw streets closed down because the gunman was on the run. So it was 3 hours of just, or longer than that, of an insane manhunt with all kinds of officials, helicopters. It was completely surreal. But yeah, man, it's crazy to kind of put your foot in multiple worlds, both in the MMA world and then also, you know, the local news media world. So, crazy weekend for sure.
Oh, yeah, but we're both looking forward to UFC 236 coming up this week in Atlanta. Of course, next week on the podcast, we'll recap that fight card. Do want to thank Greg Rebell and John Castaneda for coming on this week's edition of the podcast. And be sure to check out our sponsor, Roman, for a free online visit. Go to GetRoman.com/MMA Report. That's GetRoman.com/MMA Report. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Southern Hospitality with DJ Eakin Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The things that are taking place in hip-hop right now, because I know you're a major hip-hop fan, which is kind of how we gravitated towards each other in the very beginning. What's your take on the whole Nipsey Hussle thing?
I think it's a tragedy. I think it hit a lot of people really close to home, really close to their heart, because I think genuinely the consensus was he was a good guy.
Right.
And did a lot of positive things for the hip-hop community, his local community. He had a very good platform, and he used it to spread positivity, which is rare. Right now, you get a lot of the BS. You get a lot of the Soulja Boys and the Kodak Blacks of the world, and I happen to love both of them. But are they doing anything for the culture, for political statements? Are they progressing the culture forward? I can't 100% say that with confidence. But for Nip, I think a lot of people felt that he was a very positive influence on our culture and the music and business. And, you know, he had a really good platform again, and he used it for good.
Does it seem like hip hop is the only genre though that your life seems like it's constantly? And I mean, like I said, I know you being down in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area, you've seen your share of parties and craziness, and even having clients in this hip hop world. And can we get out of this thing of where hip hop, no matter how much you continue to grow, that you still feel threatened? Do you think there's a space for that?
You know what? I don't think that that's going to happen in the near future. I mean, just being realistic, not being a pessimist, but we'll see what happens. We jump on this bandwagon for a month, a few weeks, rip Nipsey Hussle, rip the other gentleman that passed away, the basketball
player. Triple X Tentacion.
Him, and then there was a basket, Clifford Dixon.
Oh, yeah, right, yep.
As well, he was buried yesterday. So we jump on these things, and we're sorry for a minute, but then the new thing comes on. A Kardashian gets cheated on. Kylie puts out a new lip kit, and we're completely distracted. So I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. There's a couple of us that are woke, but that's few and far between.
Southern Hospitality with DJ Eakin can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.